Hey, maybe you started your business because it was your passion, but fell into HR as your business got going. Like for us in this podcast, nobody's an expert in all areas, including HR. That's why we're excited about an all-in-one solution that can give you your time back to doing what you love most, growing your business. Bamboo HR is a powerful yet flexible all-in-one HR solution for your growing business. You want to be creative. You don't want to be focused on these issues, but they're so vitally important. Stop spending countless hours on payroll, time tracking, benefits, performance management. With Bamboo HR, those hours are shaved down to minutes. And it's why over 34,000 companies trust Bamboo HR, because it's an integrated system designed to handle your current and upcoming HR needs. Plus, Bamboo HR prides itself on being super easy, easy to use, easy to learn, easy to implement, and very easy to love. Take a couple of minutes, check out the free demo, and see how nimble and affordable this valuable tool can be. HR is hard, but Bamboo HR is easy. Reclaim your time and do what we did. Check out the free demo at bamboohr.com/free demo. See for yourself all that Bamboo HR can do and how truly affordable it can be as well. That's bamboohr.com/free demo, bamboohr.com/free demo.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in details.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. I am Brian Kilmeade. Thanks for dating late or dating early. Look at my guest list. Senator Ted Cruz is going to be in here. He's talking Greenland and so much more. Mike Rowe, the magic of the blue-collar worker, how he could give you money and how I'd never be eligible for it. And Seth Dillon, he was laughing right through the pandemic, even when he was banned from social media with the Babylon Bee. That story coming your way, because I would argue they've never been funnier or more needed. So let's begin with this. The Trump-Musk alliance. For the first time since Donald Trump has been president, he's not dominating every headline, or should I say, hate line. His relationship with the world's richest man seems to be an obsession among Donald Trump's enemies. Why does the media have such a hard time believing that two powerful, successful, handsome men could work together with one objective? It's happened before, and America accepted it. Remember, for example, Lethal Weapon? Four separate times. Mel Gibson, Danny Glover. Watch.
We're partners. We're partners. What happens to you happens to me.
Yes, we love that. We never questioned that. The media never had a problem with that. Remember, Tango and Cash.
Why don't you just admit it, that you guys work well together?
Oh, yeah.
Well, no matter what you say, Ray,
I've at least earned the right to date your sister.
Over my dead body.
Deal?
That's a man crush, kids. What about Rocky III? Once enemies, both champions. Rocky and Apollo came together. Remember.
Come on, Apollo. These are colors that you wore in our first fight together. I can't wear your colors.
Just wear.
Huh?
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul.
I don't want to give it away, but he ended up winning that night. So why is the media, who Donald Trump sometimes playfully calls the enemy of the people, having such a hard time understanding that both President Trump and Elon Musk understand who is in charge, and they're not jealous of each other's unique skills?
The most powerless image of a president of the United States ever created by a camera. There it is. In that shot, Elon Musk is doing everything he possibly can to tell the world, without saying a word, that Donald Trump is not the boss of me.
Mr. President, do you have a reaction to the new Time magazine cover that has Elon Musk sitting behind your Resolute desk?
No. Is Time magazine still in business? I didn't even know that.
It's unbelievable, right? What's wrong with these people? Settle down, guys. There is no problem. The world's richest man and the world's most powerful man
enjoy working together. They have one objective, to streamline the world's best country. One keeps us safe, the other wants to keep us solvent.
It's really astounding that the interest payments alone on the national debt exceed the Defense Department budget, which is shocking, because we spend a lot of money on defense. But if that just keeps going, we're essentially going to bankrupt the country. It's not optional for us to reduce the federal expenses. It's essential.
So, though DOGE is cutting and consolidating, I think that's a good thing. But what is making people feel so unsettled is they're doing it in warp speed. We have never seen anything quite like this. But it doesn't mean they're perfect. They reinstated a couple of USAID programs that were keeping people alive, like PEPFAR.
We are moving fast, so we will make mistakes, but we'll also fix the mistakes very quickly.
Is there anything wrong with that? And by the way, he will, and he did. He's shrinking the workforce. He's deleting ineffective, purposeless programs. And for some reason, Democrats are just so angry. In fact, they're beyond angry. They're enraged.
I'll tell you, I'm from Jersey, so I look a little differently. I say, Trump.
I don't swear in public very well, but we have to. Trump.
Which side are you on? We'll fight against Josh. We'll fight Elon Musk. No Elon scab within our walls. We'll fight from dawn to dusk.
Donald Trump and Elon Musk.
We have got to tell Elon Musk nobody elected Joe.
What's with the language? And that's one terrible song. Here is the reality. Not only are these two men, who were just acquaintances a year ago, working together, they like each other.
I want to commend Elon because he's done a fantastic. He doesn't need this. You know, he's abused by you people every day. He's found more things than anybody could find. I think he's got the credibility to do it. I know he does.
The more I've gotten to know President Trump, the more I like him. Frankly, I love the guy.
I tell you, you got to love Elon Musk. Elon Musk is almost, just right there, almost as smart as the boss, almost as smart as Donald Trump. But when you put those two together, that's a hell of a winning team.
They do get along well. I think Trump just likes someone he can completely trust who doesn't have any alternative motives.
And moms know. By the way, Democrats, you do have a choice. There is another way.
Democrats are only focused on one thing right now, Mr. Musk. The fact of the matter, he's quite popular. Sometimes it's better to join them.
He helps Donald Trump get into office, and he goes, I want to find out what kind of corruption is really around. Pick the wrong psychopath on the spectrum, and that's good.
The host of You Hewitt Show, You Hewitt, joins us now. We've seen so much in your career. This has got to be one of the most unique pairings ever.
It is, Brian. I got to compliment you and your producers on that opening montage. When you go back and do it again, I just add Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis from Die Hard with a Vengeance.
True.
I don't like you because you're going to get me killed. But buddy movies, it's the perfect way to open this up. If we did history, though, we'd show Harry Hopkins being FDR's emissary to Churchill in 1940 to figure out whether or not Britain can survive. We would use Ben Bradley and John Kennedy. These are predicates for a president using an SGE. We call them special government employees now, but it's just somebody that they like and get along with. But the president remains the president. Donald Trump is in charge. Those Democrats melting down, they really have lost it. And that's another good montage, though. If I hear that song one more time, my head's going to split open because that is the worst song I've ever heard sung. I think it's a great partnership. It's working very well, as Musk said in the Oval. They're going to make some mistakes. That they're going fast. They're going to break some things. They're going to have to glue them back together. I'm all for it, Brian. All for it, because what they found already, the USAID stuff, and they're just getting started. Wait till they get to the Department of Education. Wait till they get to transportation, aside from the FCC and, I mean, the FAA. When they get to the Department of Defense, I hope they go very carefully, but go very deep.
Absolutely. And do you worry that courts are going to stop it? I know they've already slowed it down. And we'll talk about that a little bit later with Ted Cruz. But do you worry they're going to stop it?
Well, I'm not worried. I think the Constitution is very strong. The nonsense about a constitutional crisis is just that nonsense by people who don't know anything about the law. Some district courts have impeded some actions. They will all be reviewed by appellate courts. They may get up to the SCOTUS in a hurry. It depends on it. There's one overreach by a Trump appointee, by the way, where he told the president he could not recall USAID employees abroad. That just gets right into the heart of the president's foreign affairs commander-in-chief power, and I think that will be reversed in a hurry. If they've made mistakes about the dismissal of federal employees, I used to be the general counsel and deputy director of the U.S. Office of Personnel Management long ago and far away. It's hard to fire a federal employee after the 1978 Civil Service Reform Act. But if they do it wrong, those employees will get reinstated or they'll get a buyout, whatever. It's not the end of the world. What's the end of the world is a $2 trillion deficit every year and $36 trillion in debt. We have to do this while also defending the country and making sure that the social safety net stays in place.
Yeah, right. And if we have the smartest guy doing it for free with his team that has seven successful companies and made him the richest man in the world, please show me the downside. My opinion, the sleeping giant of this administration potentially could be RFK Jr. He has brought Democrats and Republicans together, especially moms, because we're going to look at what's in our food. Look what's in our vaccines, not banning vaccines. Do you agree with me on that, that when his nomination was actually confirmed this week, that he is going to be the beginning of something that could really produce something for every family?
I'm a little bit different, Brian. I will wait and see. I didn't come out against him because I don't know him. And I know that the MAHA movement, Make America Healthy Again, is a huge part of the Trump coalition. Donald Trump is a very savvy operator when it comes to bringing together a group of people to work, as developers often do, on a multi-phase project with all sorts of different multi-uses in it, from golf courses to high-rises to residential and to commercial. So he's bringing together a team, and Robert Kennedy Jr. represents a lot to the MAHA movement. I hope he does not go too far because he does have some rather eccentric views on some issues. So I'm going to wait and see. But HHS is very big. It's got lots of guardrails in it. There are lots of professionals that he's going to bring along with him. So I'm willing to see. I didn't oppose it because I think Tulsi Gabbard, Robert Kennedy represent part of the Trump coalition. And unlike Obama and unlike Biden, those two presidents went to the left when they were elected. Donald Trump's running to the center because he wants his coalition to endure. That's work of genius.
So this past week, Linda McMahon went up and had her day on trial to see if she's going to get that nomination. I'm sure she's certainly going to. But she made it clear, I would like to wind down the Department of Education. I would like to disperse it again. But yet it's counterintuitive in a way, because if you want control and want to upgrade it, why have less power inside of it?
It's the most ideologically driven bureaucracy, Brian. I had Bill Bennett on, former Secretary of Education, this week. Bill informed me there's a $1.7 trillion student loan portfolio listed as an asset on the books of the Department of Education. That ought to be privatized, sold off as an asset, allow the Republicans to do more tax cuts. As for their Office of Civil Rights, it's upside down completely. They're not protecting civil rights, they're protecting woke. There's a lot of ideological extremism at the Department of Education. Should be just block granted out to the states, get rid of it all, and I hope Linda McMahon is successful. They can move the OCR over to the DOJ's Division of Civil Rights and get the same thing done with better people.
So, you know, it's interesting, as we look at the grades, we're going to be able to find out how President Trump is doing by looking at the numbers. They don't lie. In reading for fourth graders, they're down in reading, down in math. For eighth graders, too, down eight. For reading, down eight in math. And in reading, down five. So this is terrible, and we just spend more and more money if you look at how much money we're investing. So it's not a lack of focus. It's a lack of planning and maybe learning the wrong thing. What I'm also encouraged about is the elimination of CRT, the 1619 project. How convincing can they be in Washington to convince all 50 states that they got to start loving the country again with its curriculum?
Well, Congress can help. They could certainly attach to the budget reconciliation process a requirement that any state that receives federal money provide an education choice alternative. But I'm glad you brought up the nation's report card, Brian. I didn't know you were going to do that. That's a five-alarm fire in parents' ears. If your kid can't read by the fourth grade, they're not going to learn. They're going to be functionally illiterate and unable to find satisfactory work that will do them well for the long term. We ought to absolutely treat it as such. And as Bennett said to me, we ought to stop everything else and focus exclusively on reading by score and rough age cohorts until individuals can read. Because the bottom 10%, and in some cases the bottom quarter of eighth graders in many places, they're illiterate.
Yu-Yu, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much. It's going to be an interesting 4 years, judging by the first 3 weeks. Appreciate it. All right.
Throw
now
the
this.
Case. You Thank got you, it. Brian.
You got it. Meanwhile, promises made, promises kept. President Trump is doing just that, holding people accountable. Trump firing the inspector general after learning USAID had bankrolled drag shows and college tuition for al-Qaeda terrorists. AG Pam Bondi suing New York for prioritizing illegal aliens over American citizens. And what about this? DHS Secretary Kristi Noem taking $80 million of FEMA money back from New York City. It was funding housing for illegals. Governor didn't really like that too much. All this sending Democrats into a tailspin. They have filed 63 different legal challenges to stop the Trump administration. But do some of them, do all of them, have a legal leg to stand on? Joining us now is Texas Senator Ted Cruz, an extremely well-respected lawyer in his own right. Senator, great to see you. Describe the first 3 weeks.
Always good to be with you.
Yeah, and the blocking and the no tackling, but the legal blocking of the Democrats.
Well, look, I got to say, in the history of our country, we've never had a first 3 weeks of a president like we have had now. It has been shock and awe. President Trump hit the ground running, and you look at what's being done, the executive orders to secure the border, putting Marines down on our southern border, sending ICE out to arrest murderers and rapists and child molesters and Venezuelan gang members. You look at the energy deregulations, ending the war on energy to drive down the price of gasoline and everything else that consumers are struggling. You look at standing with our friends and allies, demanding that Hamas return the Israeli terrorists and return the hostages and getting those hostages returned back. Across the board, they've been hitting the ground running, and that it doesn't even begin with Doge and Elon Musk highlighting abuse after abuse after abuse. And listen, Brian, I got to say, the entire effort, Elon is playing a critical role. It really is embodying the old Silicon Valley mantra of move fast and break things. They're doing a lot of things, and everything they do, they're getting sued. The Democrats hate it all. They want to stop it all. And so we are going to see hundreds and hundreds of lawsuits from Democrat attorneys general, from left-wing activist groups. The lawsuits aren't going to work. The president is going to follow through on the mandate that came from the voters this November.
So some of the challenges, immigration, citizenship, 17 separate challenges, structure of government, 27, government grants, loans, and assistance, 5 cases, and diversity, DEI, 4 separate cases to handle. Meanwhile, I love what you're doing and what President Trump really caught me by surprise, opening up saying, hey, I'd like to get Greenland and the canal. Let's get China out of there. You unwound this. What's behind it?
Well, look, I think President Trump laid out a bold vision and a vision that makes sense for the United States. I got to say, I think there are strong national security and economic reasons why it makes a lot of sense. If you look at Greenland geopolitically, it is located right on the Arctic. If, God forbid, we got into a military conflict with Russia or with China, ICBMs would come right over the Arctic, and Greenland is ideally positioned to defend the United States of America. Secondly, Greenland has abundant rare earth minerals and critical minerals that are essential for all of the technology, all of the weaponry that we need. If Greenland were to become a territory, America would invest billions and billions of dollars into developing those resources. That helps America. And so this week I chaired a hearing in the Senate Commerce Committee examining all of the benefits to America, all of the benefits to Greenland, and all of the benefits to Denmark of the United States acquiring Greenland. I think it makes an enormous amount of sense.
Do you send Marco Rubio over there as Secretary of State to say, let's work out a deal? I mean, how do we take it to the next level? Because we seem to be getting the Heisman from all the Danes.
You know, we are. And I sat down. I met with the Danish ambassador this past week. I met with the Greenlandic ambassador. And I got to say, the Danish ambassador, they were upset and they were offended. And they said, Greenland is not for sale. And I laughed and I said, you know what? Everything's for sale. And I said, listen, Denmark, you are a friend. You are an ally, an important friend and ally. You'll continue to be an important friend and ally. But friends and allies can have conversations about things that are mutual benefits. What I told Denmark is, I said, ever since the president began talking about this, the Greenland independence movement has been growing in momentum. And if Greenland declares itself independent of you, Denmark gets nothing. Denmark would be a lot better having a major financial investment from America. For Greenland, there are roughly 50,000 Greenlanders living there right now. They're not living in wealth and abundance. If Greenland became an American territory, they would become American citizens. That is an incredibly valuable inducement. You put on top of that the billions of dollars of new American investment that would happen in Greenland, in addition to the powerful national defense advantages. I think for this to happen, you would have to have a referendum in Greenland. And I think the Greenlanders, if they saw those benefits, there's a very good chance they would vote, hell yes, I want to be in America.
I love it, too. I love, Senator, that you picked up the ball there. And I hope one day it makes me want to go and find out more about it. I never thought about it until President Trump took over. Senator Ted Cruz, have a fantastic weekend. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up straight ahead, behind the scenes at the funniest fake news site around, the CEO of the Babylon Bee joins us, One Nation. But first, Doge already uncovering millions of wasted dollars. What's the impact on blue-collar jobs? No one knows better than Mike Rowe, who promises never to wear a blazer or a tie. Am I correct? Just watch. He will not be wearing either. I am sure of it. The war on waste, moving full steam ahead thanks to this guy named Elon Musk. It might sound familiar. Musk insists there are two things that could cut $2 trillion from the deficit. You ready?
What are the two ingredients that are really necessary in order to cut the budget deficit in half, from $2 trillion to $1 trillion? And it's really two things, competence and caring. And if you add competence and caring, you'll cut the budget deficit in half.
Well, the White House hasn't seen competence in about 4 years. Competency and caring, two things that are cornerstones, in my view, of blue-collar jobs. So who better to ask that, about that, and about Elon's comments than Mike Rowe, host of the Way I Heard It podcast, founder of Mike Rowe Works, got a big announcement at the end of this segment. Mike, I thought about you as soon as I heard those two words come out of Elon's mouth. Not that technical, but necessary, right?
You think about me all the time, Brian.
Which
is flattered, as always.
Yes, that is a little strange. I'm somewhat obsessed.
Yeah. I mean, look, competence and caring, sure. For me, there's something right above it, which is kind of, call it incredulity. Because for as long as I've been paying attention, the war, or the supposed war on waste, fraud, and abuse has been waged by both parties. Right. I mean, it's good. I'm old enough to remember Al Gore talking about something called I think it was RIGA, R-I-G-A. I forget what it stood for, but it was just like Doge. And it was this sort of this new initiative to really drill down this time and really root it out. I've been hearing that for 45 years. To actually see it happening creates a little bit of cognitive dissonance. I think I can only speak for me, but I think a lot of people agree we're watching something happen that seems so simple, but is also so profoundly extraordinary, because we've never seen it happen before. And I think a lot of otherwise skeptical people are pinching themselves. Like, every day, millions and millions of dollars being pointed to as obvious waste or fraud or something. So it's just surreal to watch it in real time.
We used to get a paycheck, but now it's direct deposit usually. And people look at it and they see 45% goes to taxes, right? And then you wonder where that money goes. And then we're hearing about all these wastes. And then you're seeing $1.8 million for a Honduran LGBT group assisting migrants in Colombia, $19 million. Serbian gay group support, $70,000 for a DEI musical in Ireland. How does that resonate with people who could tell you exactly how many hours they worked and how many times they sacrificed family events to do that, to earn money, and to know what goes into this abyss?
Not good. Look, you just kind of, I think, skipped over the real headline. Obviously, all of these things, if you put them right in front of hardworking people and say, what do you think? You know the reaction you're going to get, somewhere between incredulity and outrage. But the big issue is, if we weren't so used to having our paychecks directly deposited, or more to the point, our taxes automatically withheld, we would be in a completely different world. If we had to sit down every week or every month or even every quarter, like most small business owners have to do, and write the check, I think that, well, short term, that would be chaos because people's heads would explode. But long term, we would have a new kind of reckoning where people would be forced to understand, really understand what they're paying. And once you physically go through the act of writing a check to the IRS,
right,
then you begin, now you've got a different kind of skin in the game. You want to know where your money's going.
Remember, we used to complain about tolls until we got the easy pass because we don't really know how much it is.
That's it.
And next thing you know, I want to get change of a dollar to go over the George Washington Bridge. They should provide some type of entertainment, but they never did. J.D. Vance has laid out a vision for AI in the working class community. Are they worried that AI will take jobs away? Is that a legitimate worry?
Depends on the acronym to which you refer. For the last 20 years, I've been focused on AI. That's artificial insemination. I can talk for hours about that. Artificial intelligence, it's the same sort of thing in the sense that most people don't yet have their head around the totality of its inevitability. Mm-hmm. It's coming. There's no way we're going to stop it. Nobody has a crystal ball. It's impossible to know to what degree it's going to impact us. But most people that I talk to day in and day out, they have an absolute awareness that there's going to be a seismic shift in the way we work. They just don't know if it's going to be good, bad, or ugly. My guess, probably all of the above.
All right, so let's talk about something you're doing. For people that want to get into a vocation, to learn a trade, you're providing even more scholarships than ever before. And right now, I have news for you. There's more candidates. People are trending in the right direction there. Your criteria for giving away $8.7 million.
Well, now we're at 12.5. It's happening fast. The ship is turning. And when I say that, I mean, we've been fighting with stigmas, stereotypes, myths, and misperceptions surrounding the skilled trades that for decades have kept kids from giving them an honest look. The best way for us to make that case is to give away a lot of money in work ethic scholarships specifically for the trades, and then circle back and talk to people who have prospered as a direct result of learning to weld or getting into the plumbing or the electric fields. That's taken me 16 years. That doesn't happen overnight, but it's happening now. And so we're pretty excited at MicroWorks because we've got at least $2.5 million set aside for the next round of work ethic scholarships, which you can apply for right now, today.
Wow.
MicroWorks.org/scholarship. The money's there. But more importantly, I'm able to circle back to people we've assisted over the years. And Brian, their stories move the needle. And this administration, I haven't talked to them yet, but I'm gonna, because I have talked to Robert Kennedy about it and a couple of others, and there's a real enthusiasm for getting in front of the PR problem here and creating a more persuasive case for the 8 million jobs that are currently open that don't require a 4-year degree that our country is in desperate need to fill.
People listening to you, Mike Rowe, thanks so much for your time. And thanks for doing what you do.
Anytime, Brian.
Okay. And you know, I always think about you in a healthy way. Still to come, clashes, confrontations, and unhinged rants, the one and only Tommy Lahren is in our studio with the media moments that matter. You got soul and you know how to use it. Put your
hand on my... Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Shanley Painter in New York. The Trump administration continues to ramp up its efforts to shrink the size of the federal workforce. The IRS will lay off thousands of probationary workers as soon as next week, right in the middle of tax season. The Trump administration previously announced a plan to offer buyouts to all federal employees. However, those involved in the 2025 tax season were told they won't be allowed to accept the buyout until after the taxpayer filing deadline. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is calling for the creation of a, quote, armed forces of Europe to guard against Russia. This comes as Zelensky suggests the U.S. may no longer support the continent. Zelensky says Ukraine's war with Russia should be the reason to create a European army. I'm Shanley Painter. Now back to One Nation.
I cannot believe it. It's time now for the media moments that matter. We ask one fantastic host to get a VCR and tape everything she can, get the tape out and decide what matters most. And to do that, Tommy Lahren is here. We gave her the VCR. She's the host of Tommy Lahren is Fearless on OutKick. Tommy, great to see you again in person.
It's good to be here, and I'll say media moments that matter and also give us a little comedic relief,
in
right? We
way?
Need to laugh at something. Well, we need to laugh at Democrats
yes.
usually and people in the media who pretend they're not Democrats but are quite obviously Democrats, and there's no better network for that than CNN. And I would call him the Silver Fox of fake news is coming up in a little bit, so hang on tight for Anderson Cooper. We've got another one from CNN, right?
Okay.
There's some folks at CNN that are very bothered by skilled young people digging in over at Doge, right? They're unelected. They call themselves big bulls. They're very upset about this, and they spat whenever they have a Republican strategist. They've got to go back and forth with their anger and their outrage over these young people who are geniuses rooting out government waste, fraud, and abuse. Take a look at this fiery clip from CNN.
You want to reduce the federal workforce, maybe a good idea, try going the constitutional route. You know, I worked for President Clinton. We passed, I had to look it up, the Workforce Restructuring Act of 1994. And who the hell voted for Mr. Musk? Who the hell voted for, excuse the phrase, a guy who calls himself Big Balls, a 19-year-old kid, going in there and trying to fire cancer researchers and scientists and teachers and agricultural specialists? It's appalling.
He's really appalled. I mean, I can't believe Paul Begala does not remember that there was a he had a staffer trying to do the same thing. Why is he so outraged when a country is $38 trillion in debt when you want to cut programs?
Paul is appalled, but I'll tell you this. I'm old enough to remember, and I'm only 32, but I'm just old enough to remember the Clinton administration, right? And this was a noble endeavor of the Clinton administration, cutting federal workers, cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. Paul worked in that administration, but Paul is appalled. But we have a flashback that maybe he doesn't remember. Let's take a walk down memory lane.
Government or RIGO report aims to save $108 billion over 5 years through eliminating scores of wasteful programs and regulations. Among the 800 recommendations, eliminating 12% of the federal workforce, some 252,000 workers through attrition, merging some government agencies like the FBI, the DEA, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, closing hundreds of government offices outside Washington, and writing two-year budgets. The White House says two-thirds of the plan can go into effect through executive order without congressional approval.
Tell me, this is unbelievable. That is draconian. So many people are going to lose their jobs. So many agencies are going to be consolidated. How awful.
It was. And, you know, Big Balls, the worker for
yes,
Doge, wasn't
right.
even born at that time. I was only 1 year old,
right.
but I remember it. We have to go back to CNN for topic number two. Imagine that. Now, as I promised, the silver fox of fake news, he's calling other people names. He's trying to get them in line, a former governor trying to get him in line. But if you watch it, I wonder who's the real jerk in this situation, Brian. Let's watch it, and you tell me who your money's on.
Some of the details that have come out, like the, you know, $59 million spent on luxury hotels, it's actually not
talking about the FEMA money that was abused for migrants? FEMA money for migrants? That's okay now?
No, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it's okay. Don't put words in my mouth.
So would you stop that? Would you stop that process?
Don't be a dick.
So smug. And I also have to tell you, Brian, the number of expletives we have heard from Democrats and media folks this week, it's bleep, bleep, bleep. The bleepers, they're tired. They're overworked. But Anderson Cooper, you know, he did apologize for this after the clip went viral, of course, on social media. But I mean, he's got some audacity right there.
But Tommy, we went over this on radio. He's totally wrong. Not only did they take back the $59 million, they went and took back the $80 million for illegal immigrants that should be in a different program. That's not what FEMA should be doing. So not only was he rude, he was wrong. But you have something else for me.
Rude, wrong, and that's a great description of this next cast of ladies. Now, we have to go all the way back to last weekend, the Super Bowl, the halftime performance. I'm not sure if you watched it, but they're coming up with an interesting theory about what Donald Trump's next executive order could be, and it's even more unhinged than ever. Let's take a look at The View.
You know I don't do sports. You know I don't do football, so I wasn't watching the game. But listen. I think today Donald Trump is going to sign an executive order banning black people from halftime.
The halftime show, I was there. I don't really care about a rivalry at halftime. It's supposed to be an American celebration. I would love to have seen a little bit more diversity in the halftime. You mix in country with rap, whatever. But the President of the United States banning black people from halftime of the Super Bowl? Are you insane?
But also, Brian, to my knowledge, Donald Trump never went after Kendrick Lamar. He actually tweeted about Taylor Swift, who, to my knowledge, is a white female. So I think the ladies of The View, maybe they weren't watching, as they noted, but perhaps you should watch it before you talk about it.
Absolutely. And the halftime show was highly rated. I just think that you could do, maybe it's time to bring Paul McCartney, Sting, or somebody else a little bit more mainstream back. Would have been kind of interesting.
A lot of folks on that list. Morgan Wallen. Maybe even Taylor Swift. We can bring in the Swifties next year. Maybe you'll be on the committee,
right,
Brian.
Hopefully the Chiefs won't be in it. No offense to Chiefs, but we need a switch.
All
Tommy,
right.
Thanks so much. But I know you're more focused on baseball, and I know exactly why. More on that later. Up next, when fake news becomes real news, we're going to take you behind the scenes of the satire site, the Babylon Bee. It's okay to laugh again. You're being so loud. And it's like, the Babylon Bee, fake news you can trust. That infamous tagline could not be more true. The Bee is a conservative, Christian, satirical news site that has consistently kept all of us laughing, kind of to ourselves, at least when it wasn't banned from social media, which, believe it or not, happened, because their sense of humor was a little too close to the actual truth. Check out these fake headlines. They kind of came true. Gavin Newsom demands answers from who's ever in charge of California. That's the funny one. And here's Gavin Newsom's tweet calling for an investigation into the loss of water during the fires. How about this on the Taliban? The Taliban laughing over diversity training materials our military left behind. Here's a tweet showing those training materials actually found in the Taliban's trash. Even better, this be headline about anyone still wearing a mask is probably just super ugly. Now the real study shows about people wearing masks. Ugly. So the Bee has been ahead of the curve, so to speak. The Free Press giving the news site props for predicting the vibe shift we are seeing under President Trump. And joining us now, the CEO of the Babylon Bee, Seth Dillon. Seth, when you hear those headlines back and knowing that it got you banned, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, those weren't the particular ones that got us banned. The ones that got us banned, you know, we were making jokes that we weren't supposed to make, the ones that we're not allowed to make. But it's just when the headlines come true, I think it just highlights the absurdity of the age, is that, you know, the world is so absurd, it's almost impossible to satirize. And so you tell these jokes and then it is a matter of staying ahead of the curve. Next thing you know, they actually happen. And I talk all the time about it. The challenge is to write jokes that are funnier than whatever Democrats are doing in real life.
How hard was it when you were suspended from social media before Elon Musk bought Twitter?
Well, man, I mean, before then, we had to worry about stepping on all these mines. You know, there was the misinformation, the incitement to violence, the hateful conduct policies. They were trying to make all of these stick to us. And so it was kind of this dance where you want to do comedy, you want to tell jokes, and you want to be funny, but you have to abide by all these rules and be worried about whether or not you're going to get kicked off the platform. And, you know, we ended up making a joke about the transgender health admiral, Rachel Levine, in the Biden administration, because Rachel Levine had been named Woman of the Year by USA Today. And so we jokingly referred to Rachel Levine as our pick for Man of the Year. And that's what got us booted out of Twitter and sent into Twitter jail next to Donald Trump. And that's really ultimately one of the things that drew Elon's attention to this problem is you can't even tell jokes anymore. These are off limits narratives, and they're using the terms of service to prop up their ideology and prevent you from even criticizing it with humor and ridicule. And so that was a crazy place to be in as humorists in a free society.
Have we gotten past it? I mean, I feel like we've gotten past it. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, largely. I mean, definitely on X. And you see some forward momentum there. You mentioned the vibe shift earlier. There's a huge vibe shift when you have, you know, these tech CEOs sitting there at the inauguration and being invited to Mar-a-Lago and now kind of like cozying up to Trump a little bit and opening up their policies on free speech and saying they're not going to enforce the same kind of rules that they used to enforce. There's definitely a shift happening. X is our safest platform for sure, though. We know that Elon's not going to ban us there just for making jokes that the powers that be don't like.
So when Trump's in office, I knew where you stood. And because he was under attack so much, no one was really taking his side. You guys kind of wore through your humor. And then, of course, Joe Biden gets into power. So you're going after the one with the power, which is the Democrats. Now the Republicans are in the power seat. How are you approaching it?
Same as we always do. I mean, we don't have a situation on our hands where we're like, you know, we're protecting Republicans and going after Democrats. We just want to make people laugh. We want to make them think. We want to hold people in power, whichever side of the aisle they're on, accountable. If someone on the right is engaging in hypocrisy, we're going to joke about them and make fun of them too. And I think that's a useful, it's a beneficial, and it's a healthy exercise to be willing to laugh at ourselves and take ourselves less seriously. I think Hopefully, in my mind, one of the key differentiators between us and the radical secular progressives on the left is that we actually have a sense of humor and are willing to laugh at ourselves.
At yourselves, too. All right. Here's some of the headlines that if you haven't gotten the Babylon Bee or read it lately, you have missed. Pope Francis announces that God agrees with whatever it is Democrats want to do right now. Sometimes it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, going to get Catholics mad at us, but yeah.
Right. If you watched the beginning of the Super Bowl, you saw a couple of calls go against the Eagles, which led to why the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl. A lot of people thought refs were friendly to them. You write this, Eagles flag for roughing the passer on pregame handshake.
It's no winning.
Right. I think it's 15 yards. PBS drops DEI, announces Bert and Ernie are now straight. So that could have got you suspended from a couple of years ago.
Well, they're trying, you know, that's funny because there was such an effort to try to, you know, what would be the word you'd even use? Queerify everything, you know, make everything in the through the lens of wokeness, make everything about LGBTQ plus issues and even the children's material, you know, it's. And so to joke about how we're now going back to a place where these characters aren't viewed this way, I think is perfectly appropriate. But this is one of the utilities of comedy. It's that we have checks and balances in government, right? Well, one of our checks and balances in culture is comedy, which treats the absurd as absurd. So we laugh at it. We don't take it seriously. We need that check and balance in place in our culture.
And you never took a bow through all of it, through the tribulations. And I think it's going to be a fun time. Seth Dillon, great job. Thanks for fighting the fight.
Thank you.
All right. Meanwhile, I got to tell you, I cannot wait to see you March 22nd in St. Louis. History of Liberty Laughs. I'll be on stage interacting with you. And of course, our great radio listeners. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. I will see you there for tickets. Also streamed on Fox Nation. We'll be right back. Say something. So before you go, mark your calendars. We have a big announcement. You'll have to start dating early on Sundays now. One Nation is moving to a new night, a new time. Starting this week, the show will be airing at 10 o'clock on Sundays, the last new show you see before starting a new week. Don't forget to hit your DVRs or VCRs, depending on what you have. That is it for us tonight. Quick reminder, on Fox and Friends weekend, it's going to be a big, big weekend, 8 hours worth. Miranda Devine, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Joey Logano. Also on my radio show, 9 to noon, it is going to be a huge show. I have one tremendous guest. I wish I could announce it, but you'll know the name when I say it. Meanwhile, for the last time, my toss to Jimmy Failla. It is Fox News Saturday night. I'm going to head out the door this way.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by former GOP strategist and host of the Rich Zeoli Show, Rich Zeoli. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.